debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The Dow is down 555 points in anticipation of Jerome Powell taking the next step to setting up, you know, or to damage Joe Biden's electoral prospects in 2024 by giving us a nice little recession, like always seems to happen under Republican presidents. 10 of the last 11 recessions began under Republican presidents. But now we have a Republican appointee. Donald Trump put Powell on the Fed in the Federal Reserve. So, yeah, we'll see how it plays out. Maybe if the market crashes enough today, the Fed will hold back. But I doubt it. I think they really want this. This is nuts. Also, is Joe Biden going to play hardball on the debt ceiling face-off? Another thing that could be affecting the markets. Janet Yellen said that June 1st is the new deadline. That's getting pretty tight. Will Donald Trump's town hall on CNN help him, hurt him? What's it going to do to CNN? What should it do to America? Should someone who helped overthrow America's government be normalized? I'll share my thoughts on that with you in a few minutes. Also, how Clarence Thomas helped kill an eviction ban threatening his benefactor's business. Also revealed, a Senate investigation into Brett Kavanaugh's assault claims was apparently phony baloney. And down in Florida, the Florida Republicans send an egregious voter suppression bill to DeSantis for his signature. Alex Lawson, the executive director of Social Security Works, is going to drop by. 217 Republicans just voted to cut Social Security. There is a war on Social Security coming out of the GOP. Alex will give us the details. Also, Pema Levy is going to drop by about the Supreme Court betrayal of justice. And also, after Idaho's strict abortion ban, that state is hemorrhaging physicians right now. And I'll share the details of that story with you, too. And also, wildfires in Anchorage. Climate change is whacking Alaska's largest town, and that's not good. So a lot to talk about today. Meanwhile, it has been revealed that Clarence Thomas helped kill an eviction ban that threatened Harlan Crow. You know, Harlan Crow is the guy who's given Thomas and his wife Ginny millions of dollars in free vacations, flying to like Indonesia or Malaysia or wherever it was, and, you know, on a private jet and going out on this 150-foot private yacht, you know, with the whole staff and everybody. And so Thomas issued a statement saying, well, he had no business before the court. Right. This is from Lever News. This is David Sirota's website, levernews.com. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas voted to end federal tenant protections that his billionaire benefactor's company says threatened its real estate empire's profit margins, according to corporate documents revealed by the Lever. Thomas did not disclose his relationship with real estate billionaire Harlan Crow, nor did he recuse himself from the 2021 case, despite its potential impact on Crow Holdings. Now, rent control, which Crow Holdings documents also say threatened the company's business, could come before Thomas in the Supreme Court, and there's no indication if he will recuse himself if or when it does. In August of 2021, Thomas was one of six justices who voted to strike down the CDC's moratorium on evictions. It was originally acted in September of 2020. In July, between these two rulings, the Crow Holdings was cited in congressional testimony for being one of the country's most frequent filers of eviction notices, despite the moratorium. This March, Crow Holdings Capital made its interest in ending eviction moratoria explicit, telling investors that its business, quote, may be particularly susceptible to economic effects driven by a pandemic, federal or state restrictions on rent pricing, rent increases, or eviction moratoriums. Bloomberg recently reported that Thomas did not appear to recuse himself in a 2005 Supreme Court case involving Trammell Crow Residential, in which Crow Holdings owned a minority stake. Harlan Crow, of course, is Trammell Crow's son. So here we go. You know, here we go. We are, in fact, I've got another one about Brett Kavanaugh that I'll tell you about right after the break. I mean, these guys they're all in. They are just all in for corruption. It don't matter to us, right? The Supreme Court song, it don't matter to me, because they think they're completely immune. They don't think Congress will do anything. And they're probably right.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
After all, any effort to regulate the Supreme Court as provided for by Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution will be blocked by a filibuster in the Senate by Republicans. Yvonne in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Yvonne, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I'm in San Antonio, Texas, and my governor is not a governor. I don't know what you call it, but we need a change. But the reason I'm calling is that I'm still trying to wrap my head around January 6th. Mm-hmm. Our country was almost overtaken by this radical group of cult members. We're the strongest and the best country on earth. How could that possibly happen? And I'm not understanding Supreme Court Justice Thomas's wife, Jenny. She was part of it.
I know.
It's proven. Why is she still not indicted? I don't understand. You can't just, she's not a Supreme Court Justice.
Yeah.
So she's supposed to obey the laws like every other citizen, but she's given this privilege. And honestly, I'm upset about that. When I found out that she was trying to help finance and actually sent texts where it's a proven track record of her participating in the overthrow of our country. And then I heard about the alternate electors. Like, what?
Yeah.
Which country are we in? You know?
Yep.
I think someone should do something about her.
I agree. I am
not
very disappointed that it took Merrick Garland 2 years to decide to pass the buck to Jack Smith.
Yes. Wow, that was amazing. I just couldn't believe it. With all this evidence, we have proof, we have video, we have audio, we have witnesses and evidence of all kinds, and we're still just stuck.
Yep.
That's
yep.
my biggest concern is making sure our country is safe.
Now, I share your concern, and
I'm
hopeful, Yvonne, that Jack Smith will be pursuing Jenny Thomas as well as everybody else. Yvonne, I need to move along, but thank you for the call.
Thank you.
I'm with you.
I appreciate your show. Love it.
Thank you, Yvonne.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
So the Supreme Court basically does two things. One, they do under the Constitution. The other, they do under a set of rules that they made up for themselves. The thing they do under the Constitution is they're the final court of appeals. If you're convicted of a crime and you appeal and then you get overturned on appeal and then the government comes back and says, no, we really think you should be convicted. Or if you sue somebody and they sue back and it goes back and forth. There has to be a point someplace where the buck stops. That's the Supreme Court. It's the final court of appeals. They also adjudicate things between states and between the United States and other governments. But the other thing they do that's not in the Constitution is strike down laws because they claim they're not constitutional. And what I'm arguing is that in order to do this, the Supreme Court should have to have an absolute consensus, a unanimous opinion. This could be put into law simply by a simple law of Congress. It doesn't require a constitutional amendment. There's a whole piece about it over at tom.tv. So I was just sharing with you what's up with Clarence Thomas. Now we're discovering that, remember when Brett Kavanaugh was charged with, well, he wasn't legally charged, but, you know, when Christine Blasey Ford alleged that he had tried to rape her or something close to it, sexually assaulted her, and several other women came forward and said that they were willing to testify, although the Senate Judiciary Committee at that time was run by Chuck Grassley, the Iowa Republican, and he did not allow an awful lot of testimony. One of the things, though, that he did allow, there was this this other woman who said that Kavanaugh had exposed himself to her at a drunken frat party, and so a Colorado-based attorney by the name of Joseph C. Smith Jr., who was a friend and former colleague of the lead counsel for the Judiciary Committee, a guy by the name of Mike Davis, and also a member of the Federalist Society, which strongly supported Kavanaugh's nomination, and appears to have a professional relationship with Leonard Leo, the Federalist Society's co-founder. This guy comes out, and he also thanked Leonard Leo in his book, Under God, George Washington and the Question of Church and State. This guy comes forward and says, no. Deborah Ramirez is mistaken. It wasn't Brett Kavanaugh. It was this other guy by the name of Jack Maxey. Now, Jack Maxey, it turns out, is also a Republican activist. He shared a portable hard drive of data from Hunter Biden's laptop with the media. When he was reached by The Guardian, he said he was in Europe and claimed he had just given the hard drive to Viktor Orban's government in Hungary. Maxey said he obtained it from Rudy Giuliani. So anyhow, this lawyer, Joseph Smith, says, oh, no, it was Maxey. He was the guy who exposed himself. And so Chuck Grassley basically says, okay, nothing to see here. It wasn't Brett Kavanaugh. And move along. Well, now Maxey's coming out and saying, yeah, I'm a Republican. Yeah, I love Brett Kavanaugh, but I was in high school when that happened. I was not in college, so I could not have been at that frat party. In fact, I was in another part of the country in high school. But are we going to reopen this investigation? Are we going to look into this? Somehow I doubt it. Meanwhile, down in Florida, the Florida House of Representatives just passed Senate Bill 7050 by a party line vote, 76 to 34. It's that lopsided because Florida is that gerrymandered. It would boost the power of the Florida's Office of Election Crimes and Security, the new election police that Ron DeSantis created to intimidate black people. It would also raise the fine if you are registering voters and you fail to complete a registration application and file it with the state government within 10 days. Currently, the fine is $50,000. They're going to raise it to $250,000. This is why the League of Women Voters has stopped registering people in Florida. An amendment to the bill also allows Ron DeSantis to run for president without having to resign. So I guarantee you he's going to sign this thing. Officials from dozens of voting and civil rights bill groups have come out and said that Senate Bill 7050 would, quote, make it harder for Floridians to register or to vote and undermine Florida's election administration. It creates more barriers to conducting voter registration drives. It establishes steeper fines for volunteer community-based registration groups. It adds more restrictions on mail-in ballots. It gives the Office of Election and Crimes and Security expanded authority to investigate and prosecute people. And it removes the government's liability for issuing voter registration cards to citizens whose voting rights have not been restored, in other words, ex-prisoners. this is one of the letter's signers. These are the people who are opposed to this legislation. They said provisions within the bill specifically target community-based voter registration groups with enormous fines and draconian new restrictions. These groups have made it possible for many Floridians to exercise the right to vote. One out of every 10 Black and Latino voters and one out of every 50 white voters in Florida have registered with the support of these organizations. This is the third year in a row that Florida's lawmakers have changed our voting rules, attacking community-based groups who support voters and implemented unnecessary and confusing barriers for Floridians who just want to vote, while making no investment in voter education at all.
To the Tom Hartman program.
Right? All they've got is hate and fear and suppressing the vote. This is all the Republicans have to sell.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
On the line with us is Pema Levy, a reporter covering the Supreme Court, politics, and democracy over at motherjones.com. Pema Levy, P-E-M-A-L-E-V-Y is Pema's Twitter handle, or at Mother Jones. Pema, welcome to the program. A brilliant article about the Supreme Court's betrayal of justice. Where do we begin with this?
So what I was looking at was the anniversary today of the leak in the Dobbs decision that ultimately overturned Roe v. Wade and the constitutional right to abortion. And at the time that the leak happened, there was a lot of talk, particularly from a couple of conservative justices, about how this was such a blow to the court as an institution. And so what I decided to look at was all the things that have actually been a blow to the court as an institution and its legitimacy over the last year, really just the last year since the leak. And as I'm sure listeners are aware, there's just sort of a steady drip, drip, drip of news about the court, and particularly about ethical lapses on the part of several justices.
Yeah, and of course, when that leak happened, Sam Alito was going, you know, full-blown hysterics. He was talking about how it's going to send assassins after him. And now there's, I think a fair amount of evidence, or at least a fair amount of speculation, that Sam Alito himself was the source of the leak, since we know for a fact that he was the source of the leak about the what was the previous case? Refresh my
There's an allegation that he told friends about the outcome of the Hobby Lobby case.
Hobby Lobby, that was it.
Yeah, I would not say that it is like 100% confirmed. It is very likely. Whether or not Alito is responsible for this one, I really have no idea.
Right. That was his hysteria. And now we've got John Roberts basically telling Dick Durbin and the Senate Judiciary Committee to, you know, go pound sand. So how does this play out? I mean, I've read one book and read about more peripherally about the 1937 Supreme Court crisis, where Franklin Roosevelt was looking at the possibility of the National Reconstruction Act being overturned by the Supreme Court, Social Security being overturned by the Supreme Court, the minimum wage, you know, all these things were teed up. And it appears that Francis Perkins actually convinced one of the justices, and as I recall, his name was Roberts, to change his vote. And that became known as the switch in time that saved nine, you know, as FDR was talking about packing the court or changing the, forcing the retirement of all the justices over 70, or making them justices emeritus so they would have cumulatively had one vote. And that was, as I recall, five of them. That worked out okay, but there was enormous public pressure. I mean, as much as Republicans today and even Wikipedia says, you know, it wouldn't have passed, when you read the actual histories written back in the 40s, there was huge popular support for reforming the court and going along with FDR. Where are we at now?
Yeah, I think that history is interesting. I think you know more details than I do, actually. But the lessons from it, I think traditionally over many decades, the lesson learned was don't go after the court, because Roosevelt didn't get that through. And then he lost significantly in the 1938 midterm elections, you know, the Democratic Party. And so the idea with it was that this was a political third rail and you can't touch it. I think people who want to reform the Supreme Court now and want to add justices to the court to sort of rebalance it ideologically see a different lesson from that time. What they see is that the court bowed to political pressure and changed course. I think there was at least one, if not more, retirements at that point. And so FDR was actually able to remake.
No, it was Owen Roberts changed his vote, if my recollection is. I wrote a book about this called The Hidden History of the Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America. I mean, it's not entirely about this. There's two chapters about it, but I really dug into it.
Yeah. So the political pressure.
And in 38, by the way, the reason FDR lost in 38 was because there was a huge growing right-wing backlash to American involvement in a war in Europe, or the possibility of a war in Europe. The German Bund was doing well. It was sort of like what you're seeing right now with this huge wave of, you know, right-wingers and Nazis out marching in public. And that really mobilized the Republican vote in 38. It had very little to do with the Supreme Court, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, so there you go. That's the lesson that was taken for a long time. And so I do think, you know, you
promoted.
Among them, people are rethinking that lesson.
Yeah. So you've done the research into this last year of, you know, what's going on with the, I wrote that book 3 years ago. Where is this court most likely to go? Or actually, I think maybe even a larger question is, where does Congress go? Article 3, Section 2 explicitly says that Congress can regulate the court. In fact, must regulate the court. Congress brought the court into being, you know, with the initial Judiciary Act. The Constitution just authorizes Congress to create the court. So, you know, the court is not the first among equals. The Congress is the first among equals. Do you think that there's any chance that between now and the next election that Congress will do anything? Or will Republicans obstruct everything? It certainly looks that way.
Well, I think at the moment, yes, there's a divided Congress. So I don't expect any legislative, you know, imposition of an ethics code or expansion of the court or term limits, jurisdiction stripping. Those are sort of the three big reforms that have been talked about recently. Right. But I do think that it's increasingly on the minds of Democratic lawmakers. And it's something that they will continue to talk about. You know, the Democrats have a majority in the Senate right now. They don't seem to be being very aggressive with that majority.
Yeah, sadly.
At the moment, they're currently down a member of the Judiciary Committee. Senator Feinstein is ill at the moment, so they don't even have a majority on the Judiciary Committee to look into this stuff. But I do think that there is a growing movement both in Congress and outside of it, that the court is moving in a bad direction, both ideologically, moving, you know, lurching very far to the right in its opinions, and also a growing sense of ethical lapses that are damaging to the court and make people question.
So we have Clarence Thomas, you know, who, along with his wife, has taken millions of dollars in free vacations from a guy who funds multiple organizations that have business across, in front of the court, including at least one case that we know of his own company having business or being interested in business before the court, Harlan Crowe. You've got Justice Thomas's wife taking over $10 million in commissions for, you know, hiring lawyers who may argue before the court.
Justice Roberts, yeah.
Or Justice Roberts, thank you. We've got Neil Gorsuch with this land deal, you know, where he finally was able to sell his property in Colorado to a law firm that does business before the court. My understanding is that Amy Coney Barrett's father was one of the top lawyers for, was it Shell Oil Company, one of the big oil companies? And she has refused to recuse herself from cases that have involved issues that her father was litigating back in the day, and that her husband now has, his law practice has just completely exploded since she was put on the court. I suppose you could expect that.
That is actually a new one to me. I look into that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hadn't heard about that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Alito was just in Europe, I know, just a month or so ago, giving us, you know, flown over first class and put up in five-star hotels, you know, giving a speech to some right-wing group there. Maybe this is his way of getting vacations. Do you know anything about Alito's ethical lapses beyond that?
I think Alito was certainly at the center of this New York Times reporting about, you know, that he allegedly did tell friends the outcome of the Hobby Lobby case.
Right.
I think what we see from Justice Alito, though, is not this kind of typical, you know, corruption quid pro quo going on. I think it's much more, you know, when I think of him on the court, I think of him as just very ideological, you know, very right wing. Very open about that yeah. project in a way, very partisan.
The Supreme Court Historical Society, if I'm remembering the name right, you know, has bought several blocks of land near the Supreme Court building. They've gotten millions of dollars from donors, and they have been wining and dining Alito aggressively, apparently. Is this something that is an ethical problem, or is this just, hey, it's okay?
So I don't know actually the details of that, but the Supreme Court Historical Society is sort of like dedicated to the, like the furthering the institution of the court, just sort of like kind of like a, you know,
like a fan
not
club.
Threatening kind of nonpartisan institution. That's my understanding of it. It is also my understanding that part of the campaign that the New York Times reported on last year, orchestrated by the Reverend Rob Schenck, was to sort of infiltrate that group, have, you know, very wealthy anti-abortion donors for him, you know, donate and join the society and therefore gain proximity to the justices. So my knowledge about the society is that it was sort of used in this way as a way to get closer to the justices. And sort of, I my understanding was that it had been unwitting on their part, but
right. And then there's Neil Gorsuch, whose mother tried to wreck the EPA, tried to defund the EPA, had to resign after 3 years in disgrace. The only EPA administrator, I believe, well, no, there was one under Trump too, who resigned. Oh, damn, we just hit a hard break. I'm sorry. Pema Levy. Pema, I'm sorry. I can't continue that question. But Pema's great piece over at motherjones.com, The Dobbs Leak Didn't Wreck the Supreme Court. Check it out. Pema, thanks so much for dropping by and speaking with me.
Thank you.
It's great talking with you. Great work that you're doing. I want to get into Idaho's abortion ban. Stay tuned. It's the place where despair is not an option. We'll be right back. This is really, really grim news. Kaiser Health News. This is not, you know, some left-wing publication or something like that. This is Kaiser Health News. This is just, you know, straight-up reporting on what's going on in the medical industry, essentially. The dateline of this story by Sarah Varney is Sandpoint, Ohio, a city in northern Idaho. And they are in the process of closing Sandpoint's only labor and delivery ward. Kaiser Health News notes this is collateral damage from the state's Republican-led effort to criminalize nearly all abortion. Later this month, the hospital founded in 1949 near the shores of Lake Pend Oriel will stop providing services for expectant mothers. In June, a second Idaho hospital, Valor Health, in the rural city of Emmett, will also halt labor and delivery services. Bonner General Health officials said, in a public statement, highly respected, talented physicians are leaving. Recruiting replacements will be extraordinarily difficult. State Republican Mark Sauder, who is a Republican from a community about 60 miles south of, northeast of Spokane, said he hadn't thought much about the abortion ban, but he had dinner with some people from the hospital, a physician from the ER, and they told him what a terrible disaster this is. So he sponsored a bill that would have allowed doctors to terminate a woman's pregnancy if a woman's health was at risk, not just her life. And it got it didn't even get out of committee. Republicans in the legislature stopped it even from getting out of committee. In Boise, I'm quoting from Kaiser Health News now, in Boise, the state capital, Lauren Miller, an Ob-Gyn, resigned earlier this month from her position at one of the state's largest hospitals, St. Luke's Health System, further shrinking the state's already minuscule core of maternal fetal medicine specialists. As a doctor who cares for complex and high-risk cases, she said that she had to send patients out of state to end dangerous pregnancies, including a woman with serious kidney disease. She said, I could have easily taken care of that patient along with my partners. Instead, she had to leave her family and fly hours away to receive care in an expeditious time frame. It's not what I signed up to do. She also cited lawmakers' failure to extend postpartum Medicaid coverage beyond 2 months. So you have a baby in Idaho, you have Medicaid for 2 months, and that's it. Sorry, Charlie. 75 out of 117 Ob-Gyns recently surveyed by the Idaho Coalition for Safe Reproductive Health Care said they are considering leaving the state. 73 out of the 75 cited Idaho's abortion laws. Idaho is one of 15 states in this situation. And even medical students are starting to change their plans. They quoted two medical students, first-year medical students in Moscow, Idaho, who said, we wouldn't feel safe here as providers. We are not going to practice medicine in Idaho when we graduate. This is a disaster. If I was, or I was advising one of my daughters, you know, if I was a fertility age woman in Idaho, I would leave the state. And welcome back. So the infographic of the day over at the top of Democratic Underground is titled, Please Take a Moment Today to Spare a Thought for Poor, Underprivileged Sam Alito. Yes, he may be one of the most powerful people in the United States, appointed for life to a position which gives him the ability to ram his extreme right-wing beliefs down the throats of every single American citizen, a position giving him immense control over the lives of all Americans while remaining free from accountability or ethical considerations. But it's not all sunshine and roses for Sam Alito. You see, sometimes people criticize him, and that makes him very, very sad. This is what he told the Wall Street Journal last week, and I quote, we are being hammered daily, and I think quite unfairly in a lot of instances, and nobody, practically nobody, is defending us. So please take a moment today to spare a thought for Sam Alito. It's just a lowly, he's just a lowly Supreme Court justice living in the lap of luxury, and all he wants is to take away your rights and not have to listen to you whine about it, okay? Brilliant. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So Robert Reich is writing over at Substack.com, robertreich.substack.com today, or maybe it was yesterday. Democrats joined Republicans during the Trump administration three times to raise the debt ceiling, even though Donald Trump pushed through, you know, a $2 trillion tax cut for billionaires, which, you know, over decades will end up being a $10 trillion tax cut for billionaires. You know, Democrats said, if you guys have control and you guys want to do the spending, we will raise the debt ceiling. And so, but Republicans, of course, use the debt ceiling as a club. They've been doing this since Newt Gingrich pioneered this in 1995. So what should we do? Well, you know my opinion. I wrote about this and talked about this on this program last week, wrote about it over at Hartman Report. The 14th Amendment says the validity of the public debt of the United States shall not be questioned. That's in the Constitution. So the debt ceiling law is unconstitutional. Biden needs to just go ahead and pay the bills. Just pay the damn bills. Ignore the Republicans. Stop all this moving money around and Janet Yellen being all hysterical. Just pay the damn bills. And let the Republicans sue you at the Supreme Court. You know, I can't imagine that as partisan as these justices are, you know, I'm sure that probably Clarence Thomas would vote. I'm not sure, but I'm guessing Clarence Thomas would vote. Yeah, let the country go down the tubes. Claim default. I mean, you know, he hates this country anyway. His wife tried to overthrow our government. So Thomas would probably be in on that. Kavanaugh probably would go along with it because he hates Democrats so much and he wants revenge for being called out as an attempted rapist. Gorsuch, who knows? I mean, his new campaign, and I'll be talking about this later in the week, his new campaign is to try to gut all federal regulatory agencies. So maybe he wants the government, the country to stick around for a little while. I don't know. But I can't imagine that Roberts would go along with destroying the United States full faith and credit, as crazy as he is. Maybe Alito would. But I think that, you know, if we'll see, I suppose. Amy Coney Barrett is a wild card. I have no idea where she would go on this. But if she and Roberts join the three Democrats to save America, well, we'll see. I mean, Roberts is increasingly concerned about the legitimacy of the Supreme Court. Also, CNN is going to hold a town hall meeting with Donald Trump. Should they be doing this? What's this going to do for American democracy? Program. Is this an attempt to normalize Trump, or do they have some secret plan to hold him accountable? Welcome back. So CNN has announced that at some near future date, they have announced that they're going to hold a town hall meeting in New Hampshire with nothing but friendly questioners. All of the entire audience will be Republicans and Republican-leaning independents, people who intend to vote in the Republican primary, basically, in New Hampshire, with Donald Trump. It'll be moderated by Caitlin Collins. Caitlin started her career in the media. She works for CNN right now. She started her career at Tucker Carlson's website, The Daily Caller, the right-wing propaganda rag. And so she's going to be the one asking Trump the questions. Now, one of two things could happen, and maybe something in between. I don't know. But it seems like the two ends of the spectrum are, on one end, Caitlin Collins just completely normalizes Trump, and as do the Trump humpers who are in the audience, and he just comes, you know, he's presented as the leading Republican nominee for president of the United States, the former president of the United States. Here's the guy. Let's hear what he has to say. What does he think about this, that, the other thing? And he does, and he's presented essentially as a statesman. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that Caitlin Collins actually asks him, well, you know, why do you have 20 different women who are alleging that you've tried to rape them or sexually assaulted them? And those kind of things, if there's 20 that we know of, there's probably another 200 that we don't. Why is that? Why did you try to overthrow the government of the United States? Why did you call up Georgia, the Secretary of State, and say, just find me 11,000 more votes? Why would you do that? Why did you lie about what you knew about COVID? You told Bob Woodward the truth. Why didn't you tell Americans the truth? You might have saved 500,000 lives, according to The Lancet. 500,000 Americans died unnecessarily because Donald Trump lied about the danger of COVID. Why'd you do that? So, I mean, you know, it's entirely possible she could put him on the spot and CNN would come out of this looking like, hey, you know, maybe they did a public service. Or this could be part of Chris Licht, the new, you know, head of CNN. This could be part of his plan to basically right-wingize CNN and try to steal audience from Fox. They got rid of Brian Stelter, who had, I thought, the best show on the media in America. They just got rid of Don Lemon. I mean, they've been purging, CNN has been purging itself of progressives and promoting right-wingers and featuring right-wingers. So, you know, how do you think that's going to play out? Should they even have done it? I don't think they should have done it. I don't think that you even take a chance at normalizing somebody who has tried to overthrow the government of the United States. I don't think you even take a chance at normalizing somebody who sold out America to the Saudi dictatorship or who is actively trashing our participation in a foreign war, specifically Ukraine, who takes the side of Vladimir Putin over the American intelligence community. I don't think you normalize that. I think you condemn that. I think you ostracize that. I think you try to ring fence that. So we'll see.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
On the line with us, our old buddy Alex Lawson, the executive director over at Social Security Works, strengthensocialsecurity.org or socialsecurityworks.org, SSWorks on Twitter and ALaw202 on Twitter. And Alex, welcome back to the program. 217 Republicans just voted to cut Social Security is the headline. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so last week, first, Tom, thanks for having me, as always. Last week was a busy week in Washington, D.C. The Republicans working as hard as they could to ram through the House a bill that would devastate Social Security, the Veterans Affairs, so the VA and the Social Security Administration. I mean, just absolutely devastating cuts. And they would spur office closings across the country. I mean, they're so, I think, you know, Tom, you and I have seen stuff like this before where the Republicans are demanding cuts and they're calling them anything but cuts, right? Spending caps, da 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 da. But I do think that something that's new here is just how, I don't know, like crazy the magnitude of what they put in there is. And I think it is the only way that McCarthy could get to the votes that he needed to get to, right? He literally gave just the Marjorie Taylor Greene caucus whatever they asked for.
Right, the sedition caucus.
The sedition caucus. Yeah. You know, he knows that this is dead on arrival in the Senate. So his pitch was literally like, oh, don't worry about it. You can vote for these things because, you know, it's actually the negotiation is going to move over to the Senate. But the truth is, I mean, these guys just voted to cut Social Security and veterans benefits. 217 of them, almost the entire caucus, Tom, voted for it. They didn't talk about it. They didn't muse about it. They put their name affirmatively on the vote to pass it out of the House.
Let's hope the Democrats have enough political common sense to turn this into ads for all 217 of them, because every single one of them is standing for re-election a year from November.
Absolutely. So I hope, and there's every indication that that is going to be the case. We're going to do what small part we can at Social Security Works to lead the way. We've got a billboard up in Rep. Valadeo's district, which is in California 23. That's one of the there's a bunch of districts, Tom, as you and your listeners know, they're Biden districts. So they're districts that voted for Joe Biden.
Yeah, there's like 18 of them, right?
Exactly. And those are the ones where it's actually, you know, it's a Biden district by plus something. There's another like 17 of them where it's just barely a Trump district. Right. So the playing field for the Republicans that they have to defend is pretty large. And we've got a billboard up today. Rep. Valadeo voted to cut Social Security and Veterans Benefits. Call and then his local office number. We've already got a protest planned for next week where we're going to get seniors and veterans down to his office. And I feel like the moderates, Tom, I don't really get why they were so blasé about voting for this. Did they not think that there'd be a huge reaction, that it was something so out of step with their district? It's sort of mind-boggling when, you know, people make such huge missteps, but
they understand the media, know. Alex. The math that they're doing is that if Democrats had voted to give I don't know, nationally, you know, free vacations to Disneyland or something, whatever, you know, just any kind of random thing that you could say, hey, that's pretty weird, it would be national news. But when Republicans vote to end Social Security or gut Social Security in this case, I watched a bunch of the Sunday shows this weekend and I didn't even see it mentioned on any of them. The Republicans knew that the American, you know, mainstream corporate press is not going to call them out for trying to gut Social Security, because most of the American mainstream corporate press is owned by people whose first loyalties are to the Republican Party. So unless I missed something, I mean, tell me, do you know of any national media outside of maybe, you know, a single mention on Joy Reid or Chris Hayes on MSNBC that really made a big deal about this? I just haven't seen it anywhere.
Yeah, you know, I've long passed the time when I'm waiting for the corporate media to tell our story, Tom. Sometimes they do when we, box them in. But you're right. I mean, like when you're watching corporate media, you got to watch the commercials in between the show and remember that that's who runs the show. Those are the bosses, are the people who put the commercials on. Pharma, big insurance. I do think you're right that the corporate media is not going to run with this that much. But there is another angle to it, which is the White House. President Biden continues to hammer on this. He sees it really clearly. He's pushing a clean debt ceiling raise, and he's doing it by attacking the Republicans on their plans on Social Security and Medicare. And we're seeing the same thing out of the Senate, you know, with Chuck Schumer saying that's where he is as well. So I do think that that is getting media attention. And as long as the Democrats stay on the on offense here and just keep hammering away at what the Republicans have done, where there have been little moments is when the Republicans, you know, cry out in terror or anger that they're being called out for doing exactly what they are doing. Right. From the House floor, they're saying, why are you accusing us of cutting veterans benefits? And everyone's like, because you are, man. That's what's in there.
Because you're
what's
trying
in there.
To.
It's what you did.
Yeah. So, Alex, you said you've got a billboard in the district of one of these 18 Republicans who are in a district that voted for Biden. I had a conversation with a caller last week who was calling up and asking, what does it cost for a billboard? You know, is this something we can do? First of all, what does it cost? And I'm assuming that people can support you at socialsecurityworks.org if they want to kick in for, you know, chip in to help out with these kind of things. But is it something that even local activists can do? Our billboard, I remember years ago, you know, more than a decade ago when I was doing local radio here in Portland, we could buy billboards for, you know, a few hundred dollars a month on the main freeways through Portland. It was a little over $1,000 a month. They weren't that expensive. What's happened to the price of billboards?
It depends on your media market, obviously, Tom, as you know. They're a little more expensive than that, but a few grand for a good placement. Yeah. The key thing that I would note, though, is I don't think grassroots activists, unless there's a really good shtick, right? Like, unless you got a really good angle, like the billboard right above their office or something. Mm-hmm. I actually think grassroots-wise, the best thing to do is to just gather. You don't need many. Gather four people. And go to their offices, right? Go to their local district offices with signs that you just made on poster board, you know, hands off our
and
social
let the
security
media know.
And let the media know. Exactly. I think that has a lot more impact for the grassroots. So what we're always trying to do with our billboards is actually sort of signify that we're doing something in that district. And then we try to move it to a billboard truck so that we can have the truck sort of follow the Republican around or show up at the protests outside their office more as a way of showing the grassroots that, you know, we're working on this.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
So definitely you can come to socialsecurityworks.org and plug into all of our activities. We are going to grow this campaign with our partners and allies in the districts into every single one of those districts. There's already some amazing work being done on that front. WFP in New York, the California Alliance for Retired Americans in California, for example. And we're going to partner with both of them. But really, I think the thing to do if you are grassroots and you're angry and you're looking to get involved is get organized. Find an organization that's doing stuff in your area, local, indivisible, you know, the Working Families Party I just mentioned, or an organization like California Alliance for Retired Americans.
Local Democratic Party.
Local Democratic Party. Find your people, get organized, and stand shoulder to shoulder with them. Right. And if you can get the media to show up at an event about these Republicans voting to cut Social Security, you just damaged that person's ability to get reelected by a sizable amount. So do not discount what you can do by just getting the word out about what these Republicans are up to.
Amen. We're talking with Alex Lawson, Executive Director of Social Security Works. And Alex, as you recall from back in the days when you used to fill in for me here on this program, I am coming up against a hard break here in about a minute and a half. But I did want to ask you, what is the state of play with Social Security right now? Leadership of the Social Security Administration, the possibility of raising the cap, possible legislation, the possible success of Republican attacks on Social Security. Where are we at?
I think, you know, it's really dangerous. You and your listeners understand this setup, a Democrat in the House, Republicans in control of the Democrat in the White House, Republicans in control of the House, holding the debt ceiling hostage. This is the most dangerous setup for Social Security. So it's very possible that they could ram through something tied to, you know, a full scale economic collapse that otherwise they couldn't do through regular order. That could be direct cuts. We're hitting them pretty hard. So I think a more likely alternative is that all these sensible people, you know, will start trotting out on the Sunday shows and talking about a commission, a fast track commission.
Yes.
So that
I'm hearing.
Right.
That.
I mean,
I remember Simpson Bowles
or Bowles Simpson, the BS commission.
Right.
So those are real threats to Social Security right now. Again, the Biden White House has rejected those. He called the Bowles-Simpson Commission idea, Romney's Trust Act, he called it a death panel. So that's pretty significant. This is a real fight right now, and we have to defeat all of the Republican attacks using the debt ceiling as a hostage. But all we have to do to do that is let people know that's what they're doing. They're holding the world economy hostage so that they can steal your Social Security and Medicare.
Right.
Make them defend that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. Alex Lawson, SocialSecurityWorks.org is the website. Be sure to check it out. SSWorks on Twitter. Alex, thanks so much for dropping by. It's always great speaking with you. Thank you. John in Portland, Oregon. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I'd like to talk about what's going on in France and what that portends for in the United States. I hope that all the Republicans and the people who want to cut or get rid of Social Security pay attention to what is going on there, which is exactly the same thing. They don't call it Social Security. They call it their pension.
Mm-hmm.
But if they think that the reaction is going to be anything less here and then what is going on there. I just think they're out of their minds.
Well, nobody showed up in the streets when Reagan raised the retirement age from 65 to 67.
That, I mean, that's true. And it's,
you know, France is like 80% unionized. That's what's behind the scenes that nobody's talking about, is that these protests are not just entirely spontaneous. They are being organized and maintained by the unions. We don't have those unions. Yeah. Reagan destroyed them.
We have other organizations who will get out and get people. I think that once they start to see, people tend to vote against their interests sometimes, but not the mass of people. The other thing is, why doesn't anyone ever on the news network talk about eliminating the cap on Social Security contributions? I agree.
I mean, this is the official. Well, Biden has called for that. He wants it raised for income over $400,000. He's been saying that for 3 years, as has Bernie. So, you know, it's just that the media doesn't report it. John, thank you for the call. Charles in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind today?
I called for something I consider somewhat serious and your advice in a situation, in that I worked part-time at a nonprofit thrift store here in Southwest Washington that serves as a fundraiser for the Southwest Washington Humane Society. Mm-hmm. So I do certain janitorial duties and this and that. And so I'm up in the office of one of the managers, and we're discussing a painting project. Anyway, I look to my right, and there sitting on the table is a stack of MAGA hats. And so I was kind of shocked. It might be minor, but, you know, the way I feel, my feelings are that, well, why don't you just hang a Confederate flag there? Or, you know, how about a swastika? I mean, to me, it was very offensive. Now, maybe I'm taking it too seriously. I surely might be. But how would you frame that, and how would you think of it would warrant a response, if any?
Well, if you're in an employment situation and you value your employment, it's probably not a good idea to challenge your employer about politics. You know, it's sort of like the rule of not discussing politics at Thanksgiving dinner. Beyond that, I'm a big fan of people just speaking their truths, you know, and saying, you know, that that whole MAGA movement seems to me like something that's not, you know, not consistent with American values or even Christian values. I'm surprised that you're part of it. You know, and that would be, you know, a gentle opening for that person to speak, and then maybe you could have a reasonable conversation. I don't know.
I appreciate your perspective, but from my experience, sir, the squeaky wheel doesn't always get oiled. It just sometimes gets thrown off the wagon train, you know?
No, that was my point. If it's your employer, you may not want to do that. But I totally get it. Well, good luck, Charles.
Love your show, man. I respect you greatly. And I'll tell everybody about.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And thanks for watching us on Facebook Live there. I appreciate that. A quick geeky science for you, and then I'll pick up your phone calls. Wildfires in Alaska, in Anchorage. It's been a while since I've been to Anchorage. We've done our show from there a number of times. We used to have an affiliate up there. The new reality in Alaska's largest city, where a recent series of wildfires near Anchorage have sparked concern. This is the hottest day on record recently. They're very concerned that there might be, major fires actually coming into the city. There's one particular neighborhood. It's called Anchorage Hillside neighborhood. And they built up the side of a slope, a steep slope, and there's forest all around it and kind of through it. It's about 35,000 people live there, and there's only one road in and out. They're getting very, very concerned about this. This is climate change. This is climate change on steroids. The U.S. is heading into an El Nino this year, also this fire season, which means that it will probably be a worse fire season than it would normally be. Just last year, 4,844 square miles burned. That's an area about the size of Connecticut, burned in Alaska. Climate change is not slowing down. All righty, picking up your phone calls here. Dynamo in Minneapolis. Hey, Dynamo, what's up?
Hey, speaking of climate change, Tom, I moved to Duluth in January, so Dynamo Dave of Duluth.
Okay.
By the way, longtime guest Bernie Sanders, I understand, endorsed Mr. Biden without any conditions, and I think, well, if that's the case, then we ought to nominate Tom Hartman, you, as President of the United States.
No, thanks.
Or in the Democratic Party. No, yeah. Thanks.
No, thanks.
Hey, by the way, you give Howard Zinn a run for his money as far as history in the U.S. You've got so many great books.
Oh, thank you.
I want to put a plug out there for you. Oh, and by the way, the Department of Transportation last statistics came out in 2020 saying about 38,000 people died as a result of motor vehicle injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And then CDC in 2020 also put out a stat saying like 45,000 people died as a result of injuries to firearms.
Right.
This isn't my idea. I heard it on Matt McNeil. So it's like, if you're going to be insured, you got to be insured to, have a car. Well, maybe you should have insurance. If you're going to buy a gun, everybody's got a gun, has got to have insurance.
Yeah, I think, what's rational for cars, the reason that we do registration, insurance, and licensure with cars is because they can kill people, accidentally, but they can kill people. Well, guns are actually designed to kill people. So you would think that, registration, licensure, and insurance, liability insurance, would be a no-brainer for guns. I've been saying this for years, Dynamo. It was one of the major suggestions that I have in my book, The Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment. I'm spot on with you. Thank you so much, and thanks for listening to AM 950. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis blew up at a reporter in Jerusalem. This is interesting. There's a Guantanamo Bay inmate who is now free. He was innocent, and he was being tortured, and Ron DeSantis was standing there watching and smiling. And a reporter in Jerusalem asked him about this. DeSantis was a lawyer for the Navy at the time, JAG lawyer. They're the lawyers, the military lawyers. And this guy, Ahmed Abdelaziz, he was a Mauritanian inmate at Camp Delta. He said, there was a colonel and DeSantis. They were looking at each other and they were just smiling. He says, dirty things were perpetrated. He saw everything and I guarantee you, he never objected. So anyhow, this reporter asks DeSantis about it when he's in Jerusalem trying to prove that he's got, national security chops. And DeSantis goes, do you honestly believe that's credible? So this is 2006. I'm a junior officer. Do you honestly think they would have remembered me from Adam? Of course not. They're just trying to get into the news because they know people like you will consume it because it fits your preordained narrative. Well, I got to tell you, if somebody was torturing me and a lawyer was standing there smiling as I was being tortured, I would remember their face. And I'm terrible with faces. I'm so face blind. One time I was walking down the street, my own kids were walking up to me and I didn't recognize them. I am terrible. I'm constantly asking Louise, who is that actor? Because I'm so face blind. I would have remembered if somebody was torturing me. But DeSantis was just hysterical. Oh my. Okay, we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Thank you so much for joining us today. Don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us, and that includes you. So many great organizations out there, from your local Democratic Party through Indivisible and others. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.